Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver is read by Ian McKellen and brought to you by audible.co.uk. Listen out for next week's instalment.
Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver, read by Ian McKellen. Chapter 1. Torak woke with a jolt from a sleep he'd never meant to have. The fire had burned low. He crouched in the fragile shell of light and peered into the looming blackness of the forest. He couldn't see anything, couldn't hear anything. Had it come back? Was it out there now, watching him with its hot, murderous eyes? He felt hollow and cold. He knew that he badly needed food, and that his arm hurt and his eyes were scratchy with tiredness, but he couldn't really feel it. All night he'd guarded the wreck of the spruce bough shelter and watched his father bleed. How could this be happening? Only yesterday, they'd pitched camp in the blue autumn dusk. Torak had made a joke and his father was laughing. Then the forest exploded. Ravens screamed, pines cracked, and out of the dark beneath the trees surged a deeper darkness, a huge rampaging menace in bear form. Suddenly death was upon them, a frenzy of claws, a welter of sound to make the ears bleed. In a heartbeat the creature had smashed their shelter to splinters. In a heartbeat it had ripped a ragged wound in his father's side. Then it was gone, melting into the forest as silently as mist. But what kind of bear stalks men, then vanishes without making the kill? What kind of bear plays with its prey? And where was it now? Torak couldn't see beyond the firelight, but he knew that the clearing, too, was a wreck of snapped saplings and trampled bracken. He smelt pine blood and clawed earth. He heard the soft, sad bubbling of the stream 30 paces away. The bear could be anywhere. Beside him, his father moaned. Slowly he opened his eyes and looked at his son without recognition. Torak's heart clenched. It's me, he stammered. How do you feel? Pain convulsed his father's lean, brown face. His cheeks were tinged with grey, making the clan tattoo stand out lividly. Sweat matted his long, dark hair. His wound was so deep that as Torak clumsily staunched it with beard moss, he saw his father's guts glistening in the firelight. He had to grit his teeth to keep from retching. He hoped Far didn't notice, but of course he did. Far was a hunter. He noticed everything. Torak, he breathed. His hand reached out, his hot fingers clinging to Torak's as eagerly as a child. Torak swallowed. Sons clutch their father's hands, not the other way around. He tried to be practical, to be a man instead of a boy. I've still got some yarrow leaves, he said, fumbling for his medicine pouch with his free hand. Maybe that'll stop the... Keep it. You're bleeding too. Doesn't hurt, lied Torak. The bear had thrown him against a birch tree, bruising his ribs and gashing his left forearm. Torak, leave. Now, before it comes back. Torak stared at him. He opened his mouth, but no sound came. You must, said his father. No, I can't. Torak, I'm dying. I'll be dead by sunrise. Torak gripped the medicine pouch. There was a roaring in his ears. Far, give me what I need for the death journey. Then get your things. The death journey? No, no. But his father's face was stern. My bow, he said. 3 arrows. You keep the rest. Where I'm going, hunting's easy. There was a tear in the knee of Torek's buckskin leggings. He dug his thumbnail into the flesh. It hurt. He forced himself to concentrate on that. Food, gasped his father. The dried meat. You, take it all. Torek's knee had started to bleed. He kept digging. He tried not to picture his father on the death journey. He tried not to picture himself alone in the forest. He was only 12 summers old. He couldn't survive on his own. He didn't know how. Torek, move! Blinking furiously, Torek reached for his father's weapons and laid them by his side. He divided up the arrows, pricking his fingers on the sharp flint points. Then he shouldered his quiver and bow and scrabbled in the wreckage for his small black basalt axe. His hazelwood pack had been smashed in the attack. He'd have to cram everything else into his jerkin or tie it to his belt. He reached for his reindeer hide sleeping sack. Take mine, murmured his father. You never did repair yours. And swap knives. Torek was aghast. Not your knife. You need it. You'll need it more. And it'll be good to have something of yours on the death journey. Far, please, don't. In the forest, a twig snapped. Torek spun round. The darkness was absolute. Everywhere he looked, the shadows were bear-shaped. No wind. No birdsong. Just the crackle of the fire and the thud of his heart. The forest itself was holding its breath. His father licked the sweat from his lips. It's not here yet, he said. Soon. It will come for me. Soon. Quick. The knives. Torek didn't want to swap knives. That would make it final. But his father was watching him with an intensity that allowed no refusal. Clenching his jaw so hard that it hurt, Torek took his own knife and put it into Far's hand. Then he untied the buckskin sheath from his father's belt. Far's knife was beautiful and deadly, with a blade of banded blue slate shaped like a willow leaf, and a haft of red deer antler that was bound with elk sinew for a better grip. As Torek looked down at it, the truth hit him. He was getting ready for a life without Far. I'm not leaving you, he cried. I'll fight it. No one can fight this bear. Ravens flew up from the trees. Torek forgot to breathe. Listen to me, hissed his father. A bear, any bear, is the strongest hunter in the forest. You know that. But this bear, much stronger. Torek felt the hairs on his arms rise. Looking down into his father's eyes, he saw the tiny scarlet veins, and at the centres the fathomless dark. What do you mean? He whispered. What? It is possessed. His father's face was grim. He didn't seem like Far anymore. Some demon from the other world has entered it and made it evil. An ember spat. The dark trees leaned closer to listen. A demon, said Torek. His father shut his eyes, mustering his strength. It lives only to kill, he said at last. With each kill, its power will grow. It will slaughter everything. The prey, the clans, all will die. The forest will die. He broke off. In one moon, it will be too late. The demon, too strong. One moon? But what think, Torek? When the red eye is highest in the night sky, that's when demons are strongest. You know this. That's when the bear will be invincible. He fought for breath. In the firelight, Torek saw the pulse beating in his throat, so faint as if it might stop at any moment. I need you to swear something, said Far. Anything. far swallowed. Head north. Many day walks. Find the mountain of the world spirit. Torak stared at him. What? His father's eyes opened and gazed into the branches overhead as if he saw things there that no one else could. Find it, he said again. It's the only hope. But no one's ever found it. No one can. You can. How? I don't... Your guide will find you. Torak was bewildered. Never before had his father talked like this. He was a practical man, a hunter. I don't understand any of this, he cried. What guide? Why must I find the mountain? Will I be safe, sir? Is that it? Safe from the bear? Slowly Far's gaze left the sky and came to rest on his son's face. He looked as if he was wondering how much more Torak could take. Oh, you're too young, he said. I thought I had more time. So much I haven't told you. Don't hate me for that later. Torak looked at him in horror. Then he leapt to his feet. I can't do this on my own. Shouldn't I try to find... No, said his father with startling force. All your life I've kept you apart, even from our own wolf clan. Stay away from men. If they find out what you can do... What do you mean? I don't know time, his father cut in. Now swear on my life. Swear that you will find the mountain or die trying. Torak bit his lip hard. East through the trees a grey light was growing. Not yet, he thought in panic. Please, not yet. Swear, hissed his father. Torak knelt and picked up the knife. It was heavy. A man's knife, too big for him. Awkwardly he touched it to the wound on his forearm. Then he put it to his shoulder, where the strip of wolf fur, his clan creature, was sewn to his jerkin. In an unsteady voice he took his oath. I swear by my blood on this blade, and by each of my three souls, that I will find the mountain of the world spirit. Or die trying. His father breathed out, good, good. Now put the death marks on me. Hurry, the bear, not far off. Torak felt the salty sting of tears. Angrily he brushed them away. I haven't got any ochre, he mumbled. Take mine. In a blur, Torak found the little antlitine medicine horn that had been his mother's. In a blur, he yanked out the black oak stopper and shook some of the red ochre into his palm. Suddenly he stopped. I can't. You can. For me. Torak spat into his palm and made a sticky paste of the ochre, the dark red blood of the earth. Then he drew the small circles on his father's skin that would help the souls recognize each other and stay together after death. First, as gently as he could, he removed his father's beaver hide boots and drew a circle on each heel to mark the name soul. Then he drew another circle over the heart to mark the clan soul. This wasn't easy, as his father's chest was scarred from an old wound, so Torak only managed a lopsided oval. He hoped that would be good enough. Last, he made the most important mark of all, a circle on the forehead to mark the Nanwak, the world soul. By the time he'd finished, he was swallowing tears. Better, murmured his father. But Torak saw with a clutch of terror that the pulse in his throat was fainter. You can't die, Torak burst out. His father gazed at him with pain and longing. Far, I'm not leaving you. I... Torak, you swore an oath. And again he closed his eyes. Now, you keep the medicine horn. I don't need it any more. Take your things. Fetch me water from the river. Then, go. I will not cry. Torak told himself, as he rolled up his father's sleeping sack and tied it across his back, jammed his axe into his belt, stuffed his medicine pouch into his jerkin. He got to his feet and cast about for the water skin. It was ripped to shreds. He'd have to bring water in a dock leave. He was about to go when his father murmured his name. Torak turned. "Yes, Fa?" "Remember, when you're hunting, look behind you. I always tell you," he forced a smile. "You always forget. Look behind you." "Yes?" Torak nodded. He tried to smile back. Then he blundered through the wet bracken towards the stream. The light was growing and the air smelt fresh and sweet. Around him the trees were bleeding, oozing golden pine blood from the slashes the bear had inflicted. Some of the tree spirits were moaning quietly in the dawn breeze. Torak reached the stream, where mist floated above the bracken and willows trailed their fingers in the cold water. Glancing quickly around, he snatched a dock leaf and moved forwards, his boots sinking into the soft red mud. He froze. Beside his right boot was the track of a bear. A front paw, twice the size of his own head, and so fresh that he could see the points where the long, vicious claws had bitten deep into the mud. "Look behind you, Torak." He spun round. Willows, alder, fir. No bear. A raven flew down onto a nearby bough, making him jump. The bird folded its stiff black wings and fixed him with a beady eye. Then it jerked its head, croaked once, and flew away. Torak stared in the direction it had seemed to indicate. Dark yew, dripping spruce, dense, impenetrable. But deep within, no more than 10 paces away, a stir of branches. Something was in there, something huge. He tried to keep his panicky thoughts from skittering away, but his mind had gone white. "The thing about a bear," his father always said, "is that it can move as silently as breath. It could be watching you from 10 paces away and you'd never know. Against a bear, you have no defences. You can't run faster, you can't climb higher, you can't fight it on your own. All you can do is learn its ways and try to persuade it that you're neither threat nor prey." Torak forced himself to stay still. "Don't run, don't run. Maybe it doesn't know you're here." A low hiss. Again, the branches stirred. He heard the stealthy rustle as the creature moved towards the shelter, towards his father. He waited in rigid silence as it passed. "Coward!" he shouted inside his head. "You let it go without even trying to save Far." But what could you do, said the small part of his mind that could still think straight. Far knew this would happen. That's why he sent you for water. He knew it was coming for him. "Torak!" came his father's wild cry. "Run!" Crows burst from the trees. A roar shook the forest, on and on till Torek's head was splitting. "Far!" he screamed. "Run!" Again the forest shook. Again came his father's cry, and suddenly it broke off. Torak jammed his fist in his mouth. Through the trees, he glimpsed a great dark shadow in the wreck of the shelter. He turned and ran. Chapter 2 Torak crashed through alder thickets and sank to his knees in bogs. Birch trees whispered of his passing. Silently he begged them not to tell the bear. The wound in his arm burned, and with each breath his bruised ribs ached savagely, but he didn't dare stop. The forest was full of eyes. He pictured the bear coming after him. He ran on. He startled a young boar, grubbing up pig nuts, and grunted a quick apology to ward off an attack. The boar gave an ill-tempered snort and let him pass. A wolverine snarled at him to stay away, and he snarled back as fiercely as he could, because wolverines only listen to threats. The wolverine decided he meant it and shot up a tree. To the east, the sky was wolf grey. Thunder growled. In the stormy light, the trees were a brilliant green. Rain in the mountains, thought Torak numbly. Watch out for flash floods. He forced himself to think of that, to push away the horror. It didn't work. He ran on. At last he had to stop for breath. He collapsed against an oak tree. As he raised his head to stare at the shifting green leaves, the tree murmured secrets to itself, shutting him out. For the first time in his life, he was truly alone. He didn't feel part of the forest anymore. He felt as if his world soul had snapped its link to all other living things, tree and bird, hunter and prey, river and rock. Nothing in the whole world knew how he felt. Nothing wanted to know. The pain in his arm wrenched him back from his thoughts. From his medicine pouch he took his last scrap of birch bast and roughly bandaged the wound. Then he pushed himself off the tree trunk and looked around. He'd grown up in this part of the forest. Every slope, every glade was familiar. In the valley to the west was the Redwater, too shallow for canoes but good fishing in spring when the salmon come up from the sea. To the east, all the way to the edge of the deep forest, lay the vast sunlit woods where the prey grow fat in autumn and berries and nuts are plentiful. To the south were the moors, where the reindeer eat moss in winter. Farr said that the best thing about this part of the forest was that so few people came here. Maybe the odd party of Willow Clan from the west by the sea, or Viper Clan up from the south, but they never stayed long. They simply passed through, hunting freely as everyone did in the forest, and unaware that Torak and Farr hunted here too. Torak had never questioned that before. It was how he'd always lived, alone with Farr, away from the clans. Now, though, he longed for people. He wanted to shout, to yell for help. But Farr had warned him to stay away from them. Besides, shouting might draw the bear. The bear. Panic rose in his throat. He pushed it down. He took a deep breath and started to run again, more steadily this time, heading north. As he ran, he picked up signs of prey, elk tracks, auroch droppings, the sound of a forest horse moving through the bracken. The bear hadn't frightened them away, at least not yet. So had his father been wrong? Had his wits been wandering at the end? "Your Far's mad," the children had taunted Torak 5 summers before, when he and Farr had journeyed to the seashore for the yearly clan meet. It was Torak's first ever clan meet, and it had been a disaster. Farr had never taken him again. "They say he swallowed the breath of a ghost," the children had sneered. "That's why he left his clan and lives on his own." Torak had been furious. He would have fought them all if his father hadn't come along and hauled him off. "Torak, ignore them," Farr had laughed. "They don't know what they're saying." He'd been right, of course. But was he right about the bear? Up ahead, the trees opened into a clearing. Torak stumbled into the sun and into a stench of rottenness. He lurched to a halt. The forest horses lay where the bear had tossed them like broken playthings. No scavenger had dared feed on them, not even the flies would touch them. They looked like no bear kill Torak had ever seen. When a normal bear feeds, it peels back the hide of its prey and takes the innards and hind parts, then caches the rest for later. Like any other hunter, it wastes nothing. But this bear had ripped no more than a single bite from each carcass. It hadn't killed from hunger. It had killed for fun. At Torak's feet lay a dead foal, its small hooves still crusted with river clay from its final drink. His gorge rose. What kind of creature slaughters an entire herd? What kind of creature kills for pleasure? He remembered the bear's eyes, glimpsed for one appalling heartbeat. He'd never seen such eyes. Behind them lay nothing but endless rage and the hatred of all living things, the hot, churning chaos of the other world. Of course his father was right. This wasn't a bear. It was a demon. It would kill and kill until the forest was dead. No one can fight this bear, his father had said. Did that mean the forest was doomed? And why did he, Torak, have to find the mountain of the world spirit, the mountain that no one had ever seen? His father's voice echoed in his mind. Your guide will find you.
How? When?
Torak left the glade and plunged back into the shadows beneath the trees. Once again he began to run. He ran forever. He ran till he could no longer feel his legs. But at last he reached a long wooded slope and had to stop, doubled up, chest heaving. Suddenly he was ravenous. He fumbled for his food pouch and groaned in disgust. It was empty. Too late he remembered the neat bundles of dried deer meat forgotten at the shelter.
Torak, you fool! Messing things up on your first day alone.
Alone. It wasn't possible. How could Far be gone? Gone forever? Gradually he became aware of a faint mewing sound coming from the other side of the hill. Then it was again. Some young animal crying for its mother. His heart leapt. Oh, thank the spirit. An easy kill. His belly tightened at the thought of fresh meat. He didn't care what it was. He was so hungry he could eat a bat. Torak dropped to the ground and crept through the birch trees to the top of the hill. He looked down into a narrow gully through which ran a small, swift river. He recognized it, the Fast Water. Further west, he and Far often camped in summer to gather lime bark for rope making, but this part looked unfamiliar. Then he realized why. Sometime before, a flash flood had come roaring down from the mountains. The waters had since subsided, leaving a mess of wet undergrowth and grass-strewn saplings. They'd also destroyed a wolf den on the other side of the gully. There, below a big red boulder shaped like a sleeping auroch, lay two drowned wolves like sodden fur cloaks. Three dead cubs floated in a puddle. The fourth sat beside them, shivering. The wolf cub looked about 3 moons old. It was thin and wet and was complaining softly to itself in a low, continuous whimper. Torak flinched. Without warning, the sound had brought a startling vision to his mind. Black fur, warm darkness, rich, fatty milk. The mother licking him clean. The scratch of tiny claws and nudge of small, cold noses. Fluffy cubs clambering over him. The newest cub in the litter. The vision was as vivid as a lightning flash. What did it mean? His hand tightened on his father's knife. It doesn't matter what it means, he told himself. Visions won't keep you alive. If you don't eat that cub, you'll be too weak to hunt, and you're allowed to kill your clan creature to keep from starving. You know that. The cub raised its head and gave a bewildered yowl. Torak listened to it and understood. In some strange way that he couldn't begin to fathom, he recognized the high, wavering sounds. His mind knew their shapes. He remembered them. This isn't possible, he thought. He listened to the cub's yowls. He felt them drop into his mind. Why won't you play with me? The cub was asking its dead pack. What have I done now? On and on it went. As Torak listened, something awakened in him. His neck muscles tensed. Deep in his throat he felt a response beginning. He fought the urge to put back his head and howl. What was happening? He didn't feel like Torak anymore. Not boy, not son, not member of the wolf clan, or not only those things. Some part of him was wolf. A breeze sprang up, chilling his skin. At the same moment, the wolf cub stopped yowling and jerked round to face him. Its eyes were unfocused, but its large ears were pricked and it was snuffing the air. It had smelt him. Torak looked down at the small, anxious cub and hardened his heart. He drew the knife from his belt and started down the slope. Chapter 3. The wolf cub did not at all understand what was going on. He'd been exploring the rise above the den when the fast wet had come roaring through, and now his mother and father and pack brothers were lying in the mud, and they were ignoring him. Since long before the light, he'd been nosing them and biting their tails, but they still didn't move. They didn't make a sound, and they smelt strange, like prey. Not the prey that runs away, but the not-breath kind, the kind that gets eaten. The cub was cold, wet, and very hungry. Many times he'd licked his mother's muzzle to ask her please to sick up some food for him to eat, but she didn't stir. What had he done wrong this time? He knew that he was the naughtiest cub in the litter. He was always being scolded, but he couldn't help it. He just loved trying new things. So it seemed a bit unfair that now, when he was staying by the den like a good cub, nobody even noticed. He padded to the edge of the puddle where his pack brothers lay, and he lapped up some of the still wet. It tasted bad. He ate some grass and a couple of spiders. He wondered what to do next. He began to feel scared. He put back his head and howled. Howling cheered him up a bit because it reminded him of all the good howls he'd had with the pack. Mid-howl, he stopped. He smelled wolf. He spun round, wobbling a little from hunger. He swiveled his ears and sniffed. Yes, wolf. He could hear it coming noisily down the slope on the other side of the fast wet. He smelt that it was male, half-grown, and not one of the pack. But there was something odd about it. It smelt of wolf, but also of not wolf. It smelt of reindeer, and red deer, and beaver, and fresh blood, and something else, a new smell that he hadn't yet learnt. This was very odd, unless it meant that the not-wolf-wolf was actually a wolf who'd eaten lots of different prey and was now bringing the cub some food. Shivering with eagerness, the cub wagged his tail and yipped a noisy welcome. For a moment, the strange wolf stopped. Then it moved forwards again. The cub couldn't see it very clearly because his eyes weren't nearly as sharp as his nose and ears, but as it splashed across the fast wet, he made out that this was a very strange wolf indeed. It walked on its hind legs. The fur on its head was black, and so long that it reached right down to its shoulders, and strangest of all, it had no tail. Yet it sounded wolf. It was making a low, friendly yip and yowl, which sounded a bit like, "It's all right. I'm a friend." This was reassuring, even if it did keep missing out the highest yips. But something was wrong. Beneath the friendliness, there was a tense note, and although the strange wolf was smiling, the cub could tell it didn't really mean it. The cub's welcome changed to a whimper. "Are you hunting me? Why?" "No, no," came the friendly but not friendly yip and yowl. Then the strange wolf stopped yip and yowling and advanced in frightening silence. Too weak to run, the cub backed away. The strange wolf lunged, grabbed the cub by the scruff and lifted him high. Weakly the cub wagged his tail to fend off an attack. The strange wolf lifted its other forepaw and pressed a huge claw against the cub's belly. The cub yelped. Grinning in terror, he whipped his tail between his legs. But the strange wolf was frightened too. Its forepaws were shaking, and it was gulping and baring its teeth. The cub sensed loneliness and uncertainty and pain. Suddenly the strange wolf took another gulp and jerked its great claw away from the cub's belly. Then it sat down heavily in the mud and clutched the cub to its chest. The cub's terror vanished. Through the strange, furless hide that smelt more of not wolf than wolf, he could hear a comforting thump, thump, like the sound he heard when he clambered on top of his father for a nap. The cub wriggled out of the strange wolf's grip, put his forepaws on its chest and stood on his hind legs. He began to lick the strange wolf's muzzle. Angrily, the strange wolf pushed him away, and he fell backwards. Undeterred, he righted himself and sat gazing up at the strange wolf. Such an odd, flat, furless face. The lips weren't black like a proper wolf's, but pale. And the ears were pale too, and they didn't move at all. But the eyes were silver-grey and full of light. The eyes of a wolf. The cub felt better than he had since the fast wet had come. He'd found a new pack brother. Torak was furious with himself. Why hadn't he killed the cub? Now what was he going to eat? The cub jabbed its nose into his bruised ribs, making him yelp. "Get off!" he shouted, kicking it away. "I don't want you. Understand? You're no use. Go away!" He didn't even attempt that in wolf talk, because he'd realised that he didn't actually speak it very well. He only knew the simpler gestures and some of the sound shapes, but the cub picked up his meaning well enough. It trotted off a few paces, then sat down and looked at him, hopefully, sweeping the ground with its tail. Torak got to his feet, and the world tilted sickeningly. He had to eat soon. He cast around the riverbank for food, but saw only the dead wolves, and they smelt too bad even to think about. Hopelessness washed over him. The sun was getting low. What should he do? Camp here? But what about the bear? Had it finished with Far and come after him? Something twisted painfully in his chest. Don't think about Far. Think what to do. If the bear had followed you, it would have got you by now, so maybe you'll be safe here, at least for tonight. The wolf carcasses were too heavy to drag away, so he decided to camp further upstream. First, though, he would use one of the carcasses to bait a deadfall in the hope of trapping something to eat overnight. It was a struggle to set the trap, to prop up a flat rock on a stick, then slot in another stick crossways to act as a trigger. If he was lucky, a fox might come along in the night and bring down the rock. It wouldn't make good eating, but it would be better than nothing. He'd just finished when the cub trotted over and gave the deadfall an inquisitive sniff. Torak grabbed its muzzle and slammed it to the ground. "No," he said firmly, "you stay away." The cub shook itself and retired with an offended air. Better offended than dead, thought Torak. He knew he'd been unfair. He should have growled first to warn the cub to stay away, and only muzzle-grabbed if it hadn't listened. But he was too tired to worry about that. Besides, why had he bothered to warn it at all? What did he care if it wobbled along in the night and got squashed? What did he care if he could understand it? Or why? What use was that? He stood up, and his knees nearly gave way. Forget about the cub. Find something to eat. He forced himself to climb the slope behind the big red rock to look for cloudberries. Only when he got there did he remember that cloudberries grow on moors and marshes, not in birch woods, and that it was too late in the year for them anyway. He noticed that in certain spots the ground was littered with woodgrass droppings, so he set some snares of twisted grass, two near the ground, and two on the sort of low branch that woodgrass sometimes run along, taking care to hide the snares with leaves, so that the woodgrass wouldn't spot them. Then he went back to the river. He knew he was too unsteady to try spearing a fish, so instead he set up a line of bramble-thorn fishing hooks baited with water snails. Then he started upriver to look for berries and roots. For a while the cub followed him. Then it sat down and mewed at him to come back. It didn't want to leave its pack. Good, thought Torak. You stay there. I don't want you pestering me. As he searched, the sun sank lower. The air grew sharp. His jerkin glistened with a misty breath of the forest. He had a hazy thought that he should be building a shelter instead of looking for food, but he pushed it away. At last he found a handful of crowberries and gulped them down, then some late lingonberries, a couple of snails, a clutch of yellow bog mushrooms, a bit maggoty but not too bad. It was nearly dusk when he got lucky and found a clump of pignuts. With a sharp stick he dug down carefully, following the winding stems to the small knobbly root. He chewed the first one. It tasted sweet and nutty, but was barely a mouthful. After much exhausting digging, he grabbed up four more, ate two, and stuffed two in his jerkin for later. With food inside him, a little strength returned to his limbs, but his mind was still strangely unclear. What do I do next? He wondered. Why is it so hard to think? Shelter. That's it. Then fire. Then sleep. The cub was waiting for him in the clearing. Shivering and yipping with delight, it threw itself at him with a big wolf smile. It didn't just wrinkle its muzzle and draw back its lips. It smiled with its whole body. It slicked back its ears and tilted its head to one side. It waved its tail and waggled its forepaws and made great twisting leaps in the air. Watching it made Torak giddy, so he ignored it. Besides, he needed to build a shelter. He looked around for dead wood, but the flood had washed most of it away. He'd have to cut down some saplings if he still had the strength. Pulling his axe from his belt, he went over to a clump of birch and put his hand on the smallest. He muttered a quick warning to the tree's spirit to find another home fast, then started to chop. The effort made his head swim. The cut on his forearm throbbed savagely. He forced himself to keep chopping. He was in an endless dark tunnel of chopping and stripping branches and more chopping, but when his arms had turned to water and he could chop no more, he saw with alarm that he'd only managed to cut down two spindly birch saplings and a puny little spruce. They'd have to do. He lashed the saplings together with a split spruce root to make a low, rickety lean-to. Then he covered it on three sides with spruce boughs and dragged in a few more to lie on. It was pretty hopeless, but it'd have to do. He didn't have the strength to rainproof it with leaf mould. If it rained, he'd have to trust his sleeping sack to keep him dry and pray that the river spirit didn't send another flood because he'd built too close to the water. Munching another pignut, he scanned the clearing for firewood. But he'd only just swallowed the pignut when his belly heaved and he spewed it up again. The cub yipped with delight and gulped down the sick. "Why didn't I do that?" thought Torak. "Did I eat a bad mushroom?" But it didn't feel like a bad mushroom. It felt like something else. He was sweating and shivering, and although there was nothing left in his belly to throw up, he still felt sick. A horrible suspicion gripped him. He unwound the bandage on his forearm, and fear settled on him like an icy fog. The wound was a swollen, angry red. It smelt bad. He could feel the heat coming off it. When he touched it, pain flared. A sob rose in his chest. He was exhausted, hungry and frightened, and he desperately wanted fire. And now he had a new enemy. Fever.
The first three books in the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series by Michelle Paver are available to download at audible.co.uk for the special multi-buy price of £14.99 until the end of August. If you enjoyed Wolf Brother, you'll want to join The Clan, the official worldwide fan site for all readers of the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series. The Clan is where thousands of fans just like you meet for games and chat, role-playing, art competitions, writing contests and quizzes. Best of all, it's free. So go to www.torak.info, that's T-O-R-A-K dot I-N-F-O, and join The Clan now.